ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, this is comedian and depressed alcoholic James Nokise, and you're listening to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a podcast about headspace and happiness from my safe place, the shower with fried chicken. This episode, I'm talking to actor and comedian Chris Parker. We'll be chatting about not quite coming out.
I was on the front cover of Express.
Oh, you hadn't come out to them yet.
So it was kind of good being like, Mum, Dad, I'm gay and also very successful.
Relaxing, shower or bath?
Shower. Love a bath though.
Yeah?
But our plug is rotting.
You can buy a new plug.
Where? Like power rubber?
And his dad's best advice.
Don't be a dick. Basically. And it's like actually solid advice.
Some of this will get a bit real. The language, the subjects. So make sure you're in a safe space with your comfort food and join us eating fried chicken in the shower. What chicken are we eating, my friend?
I think we're having karage chicken.
Why are we having karage chicken?
Well, because I got the option and the choice and then I was like, well, let's see what they're capable of. And I said, karage. But also, I do love KFC, but I always regret it after I eat it.
Oh, everyone
and I've
does.
Got to go perform after this. So I was like, I can't have KFC sitting in my stomach.
No, you can't have KFC stomach. Like, KFC is a good post-show or,
yes.
or hangover morning. But if you've got a show on today.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. But I do love going back to theatre after doing heaps of TV stuff, like short sketch or whatever. Like you... I don't want to say you're in bad habits, but maybe you do in TV.
Like, yeah,
right. Because it's about the first choice and just kind of like going really and working at this crazy pace.
Mm.
Whereas in theatre, there's more time to mull over an idea or really unpack what you're doing and get really clear and conscious about what you want to do and how you're out there. And so I love that kind of training that you get in theatre.
Because that's why I think my first met you was theatre training.
Yeah.
Back when you were a toy.
I know.
Which makes me feel very old.
I was 20 years old and still in the closet and living in Wellington. I was like a completely different person.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, if I think about it, yeah. You were still in the closet. When did you come out?
I came out after drama school. So I was 21. I knew that it was going to happen at some point. I was exhausted of pretending that I could... live a life where I could just live in a lie for the rest of my life.
Mm.
And so then was like, I'm just going to lean into it now. And I didn't want to give it over to drama school. I was really clear about that. I love my time at drama school, but this just felt like something that had nothing to do with me as an actor and all to do with me as a person. And I really wanted to isolate those two things.
I didn't want to make it part of a performance?
Or like, oh, he's come out now and now he can act or like something like that.
Yeah, that was it. That was the missing bit. It's interesting. Like, so were you lying to yourself, or were you just waiting?
For me, it's like you're looking in the distance, and you can see like a very blurry shape, and you can't identify it. And just like older I got, the kind of closer I got to what that mysterious fuzzy shape was, and I slowly began to define it, but I was like, I think it could be that, but I'm not still quite sure. And you still kind of can't work it out until like you're literally staring at it at its face, you know, and then you're like, oh my god, it's my sexuality, I get it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, what am I going to do about that? But at that time, you know, when you're a teenager, like you're just like, everyone's feeling this, like this. Mm. Everyone's a wreck. Like, everyone's hormones are like, and they're like, oh, I'm bi, I'm gay, I don't know what I am, you know? And so I kind of thought that everyone was questioning and interrogating themselves as deeply as what I was, which I still don't know if they were or they're not. But were you?
Yeah, I think I was. I sort of knew I was straight, but I only knew that by,
asking myself if I was gay or bi.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely did the interrogation.
Mm.
And I think I found I was forced, I don't know if we've talked about this, I was sort of forced to do that during my teens because I became aware that my family thought I was gay.
I'd moved up to Auckland. Mm. I was living my authentic life. I had slowly come out to everyone, bar my parents. And I was on the front cover of Express.
Oh, you hadn't come out to them yet?
No, but I was already like the face of like Auckland's young gay scene. And I was like, this is a nightmare. What am I going to do? And I was like, I have to come out to them. So it was kind of good being like, Mum, Dad, I'm gay and also very successful.
How did your parents take it?
So I sat down with Mum over a glass of wine.
Good move.
Yeah, very adult of me. And so I'd just broken up with my girlfriend.
Mm.
And I was like, because I like men. Mm. And then Mum went, thank you, like that, which was so
oh my God, wild. That's adorable.
And it was like, because she had been waiting 25 years
for
me to be like, Mum, you know. And so she just said thank you, which was incredible. And then we just kind of chatted about it, and then she got straight into like, are there any boys, you know, which is her way of like normalizing it. And it's kind of what I needed, but I also was like, this is so weird.
That's great.
And then I was like waiting for that moment where I was gonna be stuck in a room with Dad and he was gonna talk to me about it. And because this is the way they deal with any kind of thing in our family, you know, like it's like, and Mum will like plan it, so we'll be like, we'll go out for coffee, we're going for a walk, oh, I need to run into town and get this thing, actually I'll leave the car with you and your father, you go home. And I was like, in my mind I was like, okay, I'm just doing the job. Then I get home and it's just Dad and I in the house alone, and I was like, she got me, oh my gosh, she's amazing, she's so good at this thing. And Dad was like, oh, so I hear you talk to your mother. And I was like, yep. And then he actually said that he's like, I just want you to know that I think you've handled this really well and that you've taken the right amount of time. And that was like massive. Like, I've never forgotten that. I mean, what Mum did was massive, but like just Dad giving me the ownership of that journey and saying that I hadn't messed this up, that I had, you know, because my experience was like, I'm 21 and it's people come out when they're 14 and I'm 21 and I'm like, I've been lying to everyone. I'm like a young adult and I can't believe I've messed this up so much. And for him to be like, you've nailed it. You just needed that much amount of time and someone else would need a different amount of time. And you've listened to yourself and that's perfect. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to take ownership over this again and be like, I nailed it. It's like a sticky, icky, weird thing to like talk to your parents about sex. And that was the thing that I wasn't prepared for, and I still don't think there's like much advice around that. Like it's like, I think the best advice is like, it's gonna be awkward.
Yeah, I have horrible news for you, my friend, because as you get older and go into your late 30s, a horrible thing begins to happen where your parents suddenly go, well, they're a grown up now. Oh. I can talk to them about sex.
No.
And Christmas is never the same.
No, I don't want that over presents.
Eating fried chicken in the shower for any festive occasion.
And it's also interesting to me as we dive slightly, or maybe dip our toe into intersectionality, that I can completely relate because, of course, in New Zealand they always say, "Oh, racism's done," you know, like, "Oh,
yeah.
You know," and then every year something happens, and you go, "Where is it?"
You know, Tyga calling that out as publicly as he did was a real like moment for me and the same thing with you know, this whole pride debacle at the moment as well for me is another one of those key moments where I've had to like reevaluate my position on it. And it's kind of amazing to do that now. But you're like, oh, actually, how do I feel about this?
Mm.
It's kind of amazing to like have that moment to really think about something.
No, I think for me, that similar moment with the LGBTQI community was marriage equality.
Yeah.
And that debate, and I know some people it hardened, but for me, I had to do the same thing. I just go, well, wait a second. I know I'm a good person, but am I? Like, and what am I doing? And how am I helping or how am I not helping?
Yeah.
How am I hurting? you know, what is my language? That became a big one for me because of, you know, of the industry we work in comedy.
Yeah, I know.
What are the punchlines? What are the... And it's, and again, it's a continuing journey, that kind of stuff.
It's... Isn't it like the best and the worst being a conscious comedian?
Oh, it's... Yes.
Sometimes I look at those comedians who just say whatever they like and I'm like, I envy that.
Yeah.
I envy that, like, blind...
I want that little bit of freedom. Confidence. To go and say it. And then you go, ah, oh, but also...
But then I do my shows and then I get the feedback from people or... And they share, like, equal measures of what I've shared out on stage with me. And I'm like, no, it is worth it being, like, considerate and compassionate out there. But sometimes I just look at the freedom in which people can just, like, sort of swing a beer bottle around and they've got their mic and they just say whatever they like. And I'm like, wow.
You are an award-winning comedian. I forgot to mention. You have won...
I've won an award now.
You've won the Fred...
Validated.
The Fred Dagg. the Fred Dagg Award for best show in New Zealand.
You know, I feel like in this country sometimes there's like a real... Like, this is what comedy is, you know? Mm. And it's often defined by like a white straight man as to like what that is. And it's that kind of pub gig and... It's like, if you can do the pub gigs, mate, you can do anything. Mm. And I've never done a pub gig. Mm. And I don't feel safe in pub gigs. Working on Jono and Ben, you know, we had this incident go down where we did a... I was doing my segment, which is Chris Out of Water, where I go and invade masculine spaces as myself and just, like, try and understand it and what's the appeal of it. And I was with the Waiuku X-Men Society.
Sure.
And they just chop wood really fast, throw an axe around.
That's what it says on
the... Yeah. And I was like, okay, what a vibe. And so I was kind of there, and it was the first time I'd ever been like, whoa, this is really weird for me. Like, and I was in like a tiny little lumberjack outfit, like just living my best legs life. And I was like, this is not good. And then at the end of the segment, one of the guys comes up to me and he's like, oh mate, I've been trying to get rid of these pufter beers for ages, and hands me a... honestly, I can't even tell you what beer it was, but it was just a beer. And I was like, what? Like, because he said it to my face.
Yeah.
And I was like, And then we had it on camera.
Yeah.
And I was like, poof to beer? What do you mean by poof to beer? And then, we, you know, it was a kind of really weird moment. And I was like, whoa, that was like a slur.
Yeah.
And then, whoa, we got that on camera. And then we were back in the office deliberating whether we put it on TV or not. And then the defining moment for me was like, oh my God. Some of that audience out there, like, why are we just presuming the audience is straight?
Yeah, right.
We need to presume that there's, like, 200 gays watching.
Yeah.
And, like, what would that mean to do that?
Mm.
You know, and so going back to that kind of pub question thing, I'm like, I'm sick of just performing to, like, straight people. Mm. And I want to, like, perform, like, if my ideal audience would be just, like, completely queer. Maybe I don't have to be a comedian that has to talk to everyone.
Yeah.
No, but, like, there's purpose in talking to just your community as well, which I'm sure you've found doing your comedy.
Yeah, there's a certain empowerment when you find that the people who, you know, you're thinking about,
like, yeah,
you know, people you care about, and you suddenly aren't in your audience. I know one of the things I had when I was doing Auckland comedy was people going, well, how come, you know, Pacific Islanders aren't coming to your shows? But they were in Central Auckland.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, because it costs. And
yeah.
And like, well, you know, bus. And they're like, no. Babysitters, like, orders, yes, like...
Totally.
Time.
Whereas my audience live in it.
Yeah.
They've, like, gentrified that area.
Yeah. Do you have secret jokes?
Secret jokes.
Secret jokes. Jokes you only have for your community.
Whoa. No.
I have performed to a political Pacific Island audience.
Yeah.
And there are jokes I've done in those shows which never see the light, like, don't even come close to the light of day. Not in alternative comedy.
Yeah.
Not in, like, you know, bless the wonderful community of comedians that you're in. Same audience.
Yeah.
But if they're Pacific Islanders from any part of the Pacific and they're political, I've got these special things.
Oh, I love that.
And I find that very empowering.
Yeah.
Secret jokes.
When I was doing No More Dancing in the Good Room, well, I broke my foot.
What?
Have you heard this story? This is a nightmare.
No, I haven't.
Oh my God.
Oh wait, I think I saw the show in the wake of this.
Yeah, if you saw it in Auckland at the return season, I was dancing with a broken foot on stage. So it was a solo show that literally just tells the story of what I've just told about me coming up to my parents. And we were doing it at Q Loft, and it was selling out, and I was feeling incredible. I was feeling so famous, so rich, and like nothing could stop me. And then on the dress rehearsal before we open, I just do a leap. I was just a bit tired, and my big flippers, I just fell over on the front of my foot and snapped my fifth metatarsal in half. And I heard the noise, but I was ignoring it. I burst into tears in front of my boyfriend who was there. It was our second like year anniversary together. Joe Randerson was there, Sophie Dowson, my producer, was there, Owen, my designer, was there. I was wailing on the floor.
On stage? Or
on stage, yeah. And we just like stopped the dress run. There's no audience there. I get up and I'm like, it's fine, I've just sprained my ankle. So I like tape it up, I put an ice pack on it, continue the plot, and then walk home, film an ad at 4 a.m. the next morning, drive straight to the theatre, still haven't seen a doctor. My foot is the colour of an aubergine, and like the shape of an aubergine, it's like swell, it's like purple, it's hideous. And I take 2 Nurofen, I strap it up, I rub arnica cream on it. To help with the bruising. I was like, the bone is in half, but anyway. And dance for 50 minutes on stage. And I did that for 9 nights before I saw... Or 4 nights before I saw a doctor. Then I saw the doctor and he's like, you're an idiot. You've snapped your foot in half. I would take you to the hospital right now. And I was like, I need to get another doctor's opinion because I have to go and perform tomorrow night. So we went to another doctor and I was like, please, 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 a gay doctor, because this doctor just did not understand that I was doing this solo performance about coming
you
out.
You thought the doctor was somehow homophobic?
Well, no, but he just didn't have any empathy. Like, he was like, get someone else to perform it. I was like, it's my coming out story. He's like, someone else can perform it. I was like, this is no good. So,
I need a gay doctor.
I literally said that. And then I was in the Auckland hospital, and then this man pokes his head out and goes, Chris, ready to see you? I loved you in Hudson and Halls. And I was like, yes! It was, honestly, I would never recommend it, and I hope it never happens to anyone, but it was the worst and most exhilarating I've experienced on stage I've ever had.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. You're not crying, you're just lightly salting.
Have you ever told that story to a straight crowd?
I told it to... good question. I told it to a dinner filled with boys from Christchurch Boys High who were leaving school. Like, it was their leavers dinner.
Yeah.
And I was invited back as the... old boy, the successful old boy, to speak. And I was like, and literally every year before I'd done it, it had been an all black. I was like, oh my goodness, I will come out to my old high school. Like, that'll be such a triumphant moment. And so I was like, really had this like huge, in my mind, I was going to go in there and like rip my shirt open. Like, pride was going to be like written on my chest, and I was going to like burn the building down. And then like walked into the school, was like, that's a terrible idea. And like just instantly walking back into that, I went to Christchurch Boys High School. So it was like public boys school. It's the top school for rugby in New Zealand.
Is it a Catholic school?
No, like.
Small masses.
Yeah, it's just, you know, yeah. Weet-Bix kind of simple.
Tana can eat 13.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I don't know how to describe the energy of the school. Weet-Bix? But it's kind of like, you know what I mean, stodgy, stoic.
Yeah.
And
literally, ironically, a school which would struggle to emotionally describe itself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so I went in, and basically all I did was, I'm just going to drop a moment where I mentioned my boyfriend in Auckland. And it was that story about me breaking my foot, doing my solo show, and then like crying to my boyfriend. But like, when I approached that sentence in front of this, like, of like 200 boys who were 17, but I felt 17 looking at them, because I was just like instantly back there. Like, that trauma, I guess, was like, whoa. And my body just went into like panic mode, and my throat like tightened over, and I was like, I cried to my boyfriend. Like it sounded like that.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. Like, the effect in the room was like, and then, like, all the, like, liberal arts teachers were just, like, their eyes were just, like, it was so stoked. And then my history teacher came up to me, who was still teaching there, and he was like, that was incredible. In the 30 years that I've been teaching in the school, no one has ever done that before. And part of me was like, well, thank you very much. And then also, like, most of my body was like, what? Like, how has no one come out in this school in that time? That's terrible. That's a problem. Mm. And that has now started a long relationship with me and Boys High, where I'm, like, basically going into their assemblies and giving speeches and crying.
That's great.
It's positive role modeling.
Well, it's an amazing story of both, like, physical endurance and hardship. And look, you get injured, mate. Richie McCaw won the World Cup.
You've got to get out there and keep on dancing.
Keep on dancing, mate. You know, snap your foot in half. Snap your foot in half. Yeah, but you kept dancing, mate. Like, bloody legend.
It was so funny that even me, I was like, how can I relate to them? And I was like, that's the best thing I could do, was like a dance injury. But it seemed to work, you know. And I just kept thinking, like, again, that thing of like, don't just presume this room is filled with straight people.
Mm.
Like, who are the queer, trans, bi, gay individuals who are in this space who will appreciate you doing this? And it might not be 5. It could even be, like, 35, you know? So, like, that was the kind of energy, and that's the kind of thing that I was thinking about. And I was like, also being like, what if I was there, you know, in that hall, and someone had done that? How would that have changed my journey, or just more awareness, you know, more visibility? That's the importance of visibility and representation.
Does that inform your work, like thinking of yourself and what you would have wanted to see when you were growing up?
I'm literally making the work that I wanted to watch.
Yeah.
That's all it's about, is like trying to be as visible and be like as honest with where I am now, and just like say that on stage, because hopefully that will resonate with someone.
Mm.
Being like, what would you like? You know, I feel like that's tricky. You know, like, it's, you're not being honest, and then there's going to be no revelation if you're just catering your material for what people want to hear from you versus you just saying and talking about where you're at the moment.
I wish I'd got that revelation when I was a bit younger, because I feel I came to it a bit later, but it has informed my work last week. That's
definitely
how we end up eating fried chicken in the shower.
Exactly.
Because someone said, what kind of podcast would you want to make? And I went, what kind of podcast would I listen to?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, oh, what if it was a bro in a shower talking to people?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what's it like? Are you a gay icon of Christchurch now?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't know. Maybe in my family.
Have you done Camp Bitch down there?
I haven't.
Have you done any shows?
I did Hudson Halls down there.
Mm.
I've been looking for an opportunity to take my work down there.
Is it strange for you to find yourself as a leader now? Do you see yourself as a leader?
I don't see myself as a leader.
Are you aware that you are a leader?
I am only doing what is, I think, interesting and what I think might be helpful. And that's kind of it. Like, and it's hard because it's comedy, and you would have felt this as well. You're like, I'm not saving the world.
Mm.
I'm like, I've got people for an hour. They've got a wine in their hand. They want to have a good time.
Mm.
So I want to deliver that as well, but I'm just also doing what's interesting to me, which is, you know, trying to fix a few things that I have a problem with.
Mm.
I say it like at the end of my show, it's about like weeding your garden versus trying to save the world. Like, mainly I was saying this so because I did this whole show about my old high school, and I don't want the audience ringing up that high school being like,
yeah,
let me tell you something. I saw Chris Parker and I think you're doing a terrible job, because they're not. I was like, this is my garden and I'm weeding that. So find your own thing that you want to deal with. Like, maybe your great aunt's a racist, and like bring it up at Christmas. And like, that's one like tiny step that you can make that can like hopefully have a trickle on effect, because she'll tell her friends at Flow Yoga that we don't use that word anymore, you know, and then hopefully we stop using those words.
But also, what is your agenda at the moment?
I think it's about, at the moment, like I'm cooking up my next show. And while like my last year's Comedy Fest hour was about like embracing my campness and talking about that, I don't want to talk about it next time. I just want to embrace it.
Mm.
And like, that's the way of like displaying my activism, is by like being like, and now I don't even have to explain it to you. Like, I just get to be who I want to be. And I'm going to like basically, before every show, just presume my entire audience is queer and they're not tweak anything.
Mm.
So it's like, oh, if you don't get that reference, that's okay. But I'm like not going to stop and explain it or unpack that for you. We're just going to move on, because I've got a lot of content for these people.
Shower or bath?
Shower. Love a bath though.
Yeah.
But our plug is rotting, so it's shower by choice. But I do love a shower.
You can buy new plugs.
I know. Where? Like power rubber?
I think there's like miter 10 or...
Yeah, but then I'm like, you have to measure the hole and then take that measurement. I'm like, that's too many steps for me. I'll just have the shower.
Is there anything else you would like to share in the shower?
No, I'm sorry I haven't eaten any of the chicken. It's just I was quite hungover today.
That's right.
It was going to tip me over the edge.
I don't think I've actually ever stipulated that the guest has to eat the chicken.
Have they eaten the chicken?
Everyone else has eaten the chicken.
I literally was like, oh, the perfect out to this would be me taking a bite, but I will vomit in the shower.
No, I mean, if you, I don't know if that's the clip we're after, but you,
you're not getting it. You're not getting it. I've got to do a musical now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We'll ruin your larynx. Hey, thank you so much, Chris Parker, for coming and looking at fried chicken in the shower.
Smelling fried chicken in the shower.
Yeah, smelling and chatting. It was a great show.
It's been really fun.
Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower was produced by Charlie Bleakley and presented by me, James Nokise. The engineer is Blair Stagpole. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin. Subscribe to every episode of this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Radio Public, or at radionz.co.nz/series. And while you're on Apple, please rate us by clicking on ratings and review, then the stars. But only give us 5. It's really simple and means way more to us than it does to you. It's a great way to spread the word and get me more free fried chicken. If you want to share your safe space or comfort food, tweet me at James Nokise. All complaints can be tweeted to RNZ. Faftailava Matewa.
This podcast is made possible by the RNZ New Zealand On Air Innovation Fund.
Okay, I have 2 new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.